How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention! Attention! This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody!
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap! It's time for
Jack's Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Switch it over. Switch it over. It's switched over right now? Oh, wow. I didn't even hear it. Okay, this is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. This is live. What's today? August, what are we at? 6th, August 6th, 2010. Coming to you from an undisclosed location. Yesterday's show, yes, it didn't go. We ended up being stuck at a train station in Fresno, and we didn't make it back. We got back at about 5 minutes till 6. I did send out a notice over Facebook to let you guys know, but then we didn't have any more internet access, so we weren't able to send out an email. I was hoping we'd make it back in time, but we did not. Not much has changed since the day before yesterday. Everything's still going the same. I see that we did get some pretty decent donations pushing us up a little bit. Thank you very much. Every little bit helps. That's, of course, on the DutchJones.tk website. Now, we're coming here. I'm using just a lav mic, and Lee's playing with the level here, trying to see how it goes. So we apologize for the quality of the audio. But a show is a show is a show. Is Mary in there? I can't see. M-E-R-R-Y. Well, I got this great email and some pictures from Mary where her and her, I think it was her son, we talked about the Dakota fire hole the other day. Well, she went out in her backyard and did it. They actually made s'mores over it. So that was great to see. We got those. Those belong in the forum. We should get people to put those in the forum. And if you go to DutchJones.tk, you can check out the forum there. Post those kind of things there. We want to share those. We want to know it, how people are applying the training that we're putting out. If you've got ideas, it's a great place to share them there. Show us how you succeeded in applying some of the things that we share with you. Let's see. Sully sent me an email. Yes, I know you were kidding, Sully. excuse me. I'm laying here flipping through the TV channels looking for Fox News just to have on in the background so I can watch the ticker. And I missed it. I got to go back. I thought it was in here somewhere. Well, I guess I was wrong. There it is. Money Rocks is on. Oh, wait, that's Fox Business. Let's go back. Fox News. Oh, the O'Reilly Factor, the idiot's on. Not a big fan of O'Reilly. Not a big fan at all. If you've been watching on the Facebook page, you see that I've posted a couple of videos. One was about H1N1. No, I don't think that it's recent. I know it's an older video. I just wanted to remind people about how they do things to distract us. And to just keep our eyes open, because H1N1 may come back around again as a viable distraction. Other things going on, all of a sudden the Gulf oil leak is no longer an issue. Boom, just suddenly disappeared. Kind of weird. They approved Kagan, what appears to be butch lesbian judge, Supreme Court judge. So that one was, went shoved down our throats. The judge in the case on Proposition 8, it turns out, I made jokes yesterday about him being a sodomite judge, but it turns out he may actually even be a sodomite activist. So now people are wanting to do that. Oh, and on the Kagan thing, people are throwing up evidences that she was involved in the cover-up on the birth certificate for Obongo. See, they don't change their playbook at all. They do the same thing over and over and over again. They just keep doing the same stuff. They keep shoving stuff down our throats and lying to us. You know, everybody gets all excited because Rangel and Waters might be up on charges, but they're going to throw a couple of their folks under the bus just so that they can get away with what they want. There is no phone number to call in today. We don't have the equipment to do it. Our soundboard's down. Like I said, I literally just have a clip-on microphone right now.
Do phone calls anyway here.
Yeah, the phone. Well, we did do phone calls here before. We've done.
Can't now.
That's what I just said. We can't because we don't have the soundboard. Oh, that's true. Lou's making reference to every time the phone rings, it disconnects us from the DSL. Lovely stuff. Let's see what else is there. All kinds of stuff in the news. I sent out a video of what was his name? I forgot his name. I'll have to look it up when I'll get Lou to move here and I'll look it up. But just people just slamming liberty, representatives, congressmen, senators. They don't even care anymore. They don't even lie to us. They just tell us that we're cattle and that they can do whatever they want and that they know what's best. I sent out a video to everybody about the sheriff of Nye County, who's standing between the federal government and the cattlemen there. They're coming in to seize cattle that are grazing on so-called federal land, and they're going to seize it, seize the cattle. So he stood up, said, "You come on in, you'll be arrested." So that is great, another sheriff doing that. So we're having more and more sheriffs jump up. We have 10 states now in the news that have said they're not going to allow the Obama medical bill to take place in their states. They've joined that class action lawsuit. So you guys are angry. The Tea Party's doing their thing. It's got the politicians saying, "Hey, we better start acting like we're doing the right thing." Don't trust in these people. Don't take them at their word. Don't praise them early. I'm talking about all these, the sheriffs, everybody. Let's wait until they actually get tested and see how they stand. I grow weary of all these, "Oh, I'm here for you. I'm doing this for you." These the excuses that the politicians put forward. And quite frankly, it's very, very annoying. And I've been burned so many times, not just by politicians, but by just people in general. Leaders in the movement, people who claim to be 100% patriot for the Constitution, for the Bible, and they let you down every time. Now, I know men are flawed. Human beings make mistakes. But when you discover... Maybe I shouldn't be doing this laying on a bed with my feet up. there's an image for you. They're out for themselves. They're trying to secure their positions. I mean, McCain's a prime example of it. McCain's down there acting like he's, you know, Mr. Border Minuteman, has been his whole life, standing behind his governor there. It's a joke. And the sad thing is it's not a funny joke. It's a sad joke. It's one of those jokes that make you cringe. It's one of those jokes that make you go, "Hey, wait a minute. Did I just drop my mic?" Sorry about that. The mic clipped off. Okay, Lou, take off the headphones. I'm going to have to sit there. Just set them down. Oh, you didn't even have them plugged in? You're wearing headphones that aren't even plugged in, Lou? That's kind of freaky weird. I was going to try and do the show from a position of... hey, it does sound pretty good. Okay, thank you. I was going to do it from a position of leisure, but I guess I can't. Let me open up this. Let me get my articles open. Oh, quote of the day. Even though I know we don't like Winston Churchill, we know he's a traitor, but I found this quote. "Socialism is the philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy." Winston Churchill said that. Somebody sent that to me. And as soon as I posted, everybody came and said, "Ah, Churchill's a New World Order guy." I go, "Yeah, I know. It doesn't mean that I can't use one of his quotes." So let's talk about these states, these 20 states. We'll get into that right away. I'll read that, and I'll keep checking back. And if you want to contact me, do it through Facebook. Facebook is the quickest way. Just send me an instant message or put something on my page. Or go into the chat room at dutchjones.tk, dutchjones.tk. I just downed a soda before I came on, and I am... Oh, there it goes. It's starting to rebel in my intestines there. 20 state... Okay, the headline on this is "States Respond in Healthcare Overhaul Lawsuit." This is from Associated Press. It was written by Jennifer Kay, and she's a staff writer. And it's dated today, Friday, August 6th. And here we go. 20 states and the nation's most influential small business lobbies demanded Friday that a federal court in Florida hear their challenge to President Barack Insane Obama's health care overhaul because they face imminent harm from its mandates. The Justice Department in June asked a federal judge to dismiss their lawsuit, saying the U.S. District Court in Pensacola lacks subject matter jurisdiction over the lawsuit's claim. They also say that other parts of their lawsuit failed to state claims upon which the relief can be granted. That's the game they're going to play. They're basically going to say, just remember when you were a kid and your parents say you need to go to bed at 9? Why? Because we're the parents, that's why. They wouldn't explain it to you. Now, that's a different situation there. But with the so-called federal government, and I've got an interesting take on the word federal government now, too, that I'll share with you later today. They just say, because we are sovereign over you, you have to do it. So all these little states, these 20 states, which I'm surprised it's only 20, that are trying to buck out from underneath this tyranny. Let me bring that up. It's great that they're doing this, but again, it's just a flexing of a muscle. It's like a dog in a corner barking at you, even though you've got it in your sights. It's going to end up costing a lot of money, and we'll see how far they push this. How far the state's attorney generals. I know California won't get involved in it because we got a communist for an attorney general, former Governor Jerry Brown Moonbeam, who is now the attorney general. He doesn't want to get involved in this. He doesn't want to get behind it. So California would never do it. So a lot of these attorney generals, when regimes change, because this lawsuit's going to last a long time. It's going to be a long, drawn-out one. I keep telling you folks, the law and voting and the courts is not the way to rectify this. How can they force us to take part in a medical care system if we don't agree to it? Just go to the doctor's office. They have a higher oath. They have a Hippocratic oath. And that doesn't mean that they're critical of hippos. They can't turn you away. Now, I know you're talking about, it's an emergency situation, that's different. But what if everybody just started going to their doctors and saying, hey, here I am, I'm sick, treat me. If everybody did it, what are they going to do? And if every little town out there, because I don't like the cities, if you go to these big institutional corporate medical systems, yeah. But for the day-to-day maintenance stuff, just go to your doctor in your small town and pay him in cash. Pay him in chickens. Pay him in eggs. Pay him in labor. You know, if it's a maternity thing, give him like one out of every six kids you have. You know, he'll figure out a use for them. But it doesn't really matter if we agree to and accept the fact that, there's nothing we can do, we'll just go ahead and go along with the flow. Don't do it. Don't take part in their system. It's just like everybody says, what are we going to do if they do forced inoculations? Don't take the inoculations. And all you people that fight and I don't know, this is a battle that I've been fighting for years. Everything that they force on us, the only reason they get away with it, two reasons. One, either the threat of force, they come and threaten to kill you like they did, you know, Ruby Ridge or Waco or any of the other ones we probably don't even know about. Or the cases where people just willingly participate in the system. That's it. Period. That's it. No other. Something else I wanted to talk about. Lewis uploaded a bunch of the music. All of it. He uploaded all of it to the forum. And you got to sign in, sign up, and you can download all the music there. We don't have to be sending you stuff. Make sure you check out the forum. Just find that on the main webpage.
It's somewhere.
You don't know where it is?
No, though.
Yeah, the forum. Somewhere. Oh, DutchJones.tk. Let's see. So, I'm not getting too excited about this lawsuit. I'm more excited about the sheriff over there in Nye County in Nevada. That's great. The judge that overturned Proposition 8, turns out he might just be a sodomite activist. That he wasn't unbiased. That he had an agenda. That he had an axe to grind. This again is also from AP, Lisa Leff, L-E-F-F. Chief U.S. Judge Vaughn Walker has always been characterized as a conservative with libertarian leanings, but after he struck down California's voter-approved sodomite marriage ban this week, he was accused by some of being something else entirely, a sodomite activist. For those of you that are new to the show, whenever I see the word gay, I just say sodomite. Rumors have circulated for months that Walker was indeed a sodomite. Fueled by the blogosphere and a San Francisco Chronicle column that stated his sexual orientation was an open secret in legal and sodomite activism circles. Walker himself hasn't addressed the speculation, and he did not respond to a request to comment by the Associated Press on Thursday. Lawyers in the case, including those defending the ban, say the judge's sexuality, sodomite or normal, was, they didn't say that, was not an issue at trial and will not be a factor on appeal. But that hasn't stopped a public debate that exploded in the wake of the 66-year-old jurist's Wednesday's decision. Most of the criticism has come, of course, from the opponents of sodomite marriage. Here we have an openly sodomite federal judge, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, substituting his views for those of the American people and of our founding fathers, who I promise you would be shocked by courts that imagine they have the right to put sodomite marriage in our Constitution, said Maggie Gallagher, chairwoman for the National Organization of Marriage, a group that helped fund the ban, known here in California locally as Proposition 8. In response, the Sodomite Dyke Victory Fund, that's not what it's called, a political action committee for sodomites candidates, launched an online petition accusing Gallagher's group of sodomite-baiting. For a minute there, I thought it said sodomite beating. But the debate raised the question, why is sexuality different from other personal characteristics judges possess? Can a female judge rule on an abortion issue? A black judge on civil rights? I would say no. I'm just kidding. The evidence shows that by every available metric, available measure, opposite sex couples are not better than their same sex counterparts. Instead, partners, parents, and citizens, opposite sex couples, and same sex couples are equal, Walker wrote in his exacting 136 page opinion. If it takes 136 pages to justify or deny something as simple as this, you know it's full of fluff and lies. You know that he is bending, breaking, twisting, misinterpreting every lie he can get his hands on. And I'm not going to read the article anymore because it's obviously written by somebody who's a little more biased against the holy union of marriage, but it's just I find it sadly disturbing that this wasn't brought up before and now they're bringing it up now. It sounds a little bit like sour grapes. I told you what my opinion was. I think it was the beginning of this week sometime. That I don't get incredibly excited about this because I still think it's a jurisdictional issue. I'm pretty sure that if you knew what marriage was all about, you wouldn't care what a judge says anywhere else. The judges shouldn't even be mentioning it. You know, they no more have a right to comment on this than they do any of the myriad of other things that judges claim to have authority over. And for two, they're only supposed to judge in specific cases. They can't make law. Another violation of the separation of powers theorem. You've got judges making radical law now more than ever. Everybody in the chat room, let me know how this is sounding. You guys aren't even chatting. I don't know if I'm boring you or what. But Dutch, can courts constitutionally overturn constitutional amendments in California? Yes, they can. There has to be a test against the state constitution and the federal constitution. And the first time they tried to bring this, it couldn't even get on the ballot because they said it didn't pass state constitutional questions. Conge 44 asked that, C-O-N-G-E 44 in the chat room. So yeah, they do it all the time. We had Proposition 187, which was we predate what the Arizonians are doing now. We said no medical benefits, no school benefits, no nothing for illegal aliens. Nothing. No driver's license, nothing. And we voted, I think it was like 71% of the people voted for Proposition 187. It was done immediately. And in fact, the governor at that time, I think it was Gray Davis, refused to defend it in the courts. They actually spent our money to defeat it in the courts. Does that make sense? Well, it's an insane kick in the crotch every time we put forth a law that we get on the ballot and they shoot it down. Now watch, they say, oh, Constitution this, Constitution that, but this next law coming up, which will legalize personal use marijuana, I can bet you that Moonbeam and all the rest of the Politico spokesholes are going to say, we don't care what the Constitution says about this. We believe it's an individual person's right to grow and use marijuana because they want to regulate it. They're making money off of it. And I think that's the thing right behind this sodomite marriage ban, too. If they allow more sodomites to get married, it'll be easier to go after them for taxes and things. Correct? Right? Am I just shouting up a rope here to play it nice? But they want to be able to find where they are. They want to charge them for getting married. They want to charge them for taxes. You know, these civil union things, whatever they do. It's all about encroachment. The government will do what it has to do, and before or against the Constitution, break the law or support the law. And the only continuity in it is that they have to make money off of it. Warren says, I would rather see pot stay illegal than for it to be taxed. I agree with that. I don't know why anybody would invite regulation. Why those of you that are pro-pot, I'm not pro or against it. I don't use it. I've been recommended to use it by the VA, but I don't for glaucoma. But if somebody wants to go out and grab a weed and inhale it in their lungs, I have no problem with that as long as it doesn't affect me or anyone I love. But why would all these potheads and people who want to use it legitimately or just for recreation turn around and invite the federal government into their backyards? Conj 44 says so much for checks and balances. There hasn't been. The whole system is retarded. And it wasn't born that way. It was made that way. So like you have a beautiful little child that's born retarded, like a Down syndrome, and just love him to death and hug him and kiss him. And then you get your other kid who is just an idiot and jumping off the roof head first and makes himself retarded. That's our government. It's not the lovey, cuddly kind of retarded. It's the what were you thinking retarded, where you're just like, I don't want to be around that kid. I know that sounded harsh. Sorry, Lou. I didn't mean to make you cry. It's okay, hey. Lou. It's okay, Lou. I'm being punched. I'm not saying you're retarded. It just looked like it made you sad.
I'm retarded.
Retardant. Yeah, see, it's better to be retardant than retarded. Oh, we had another honor killing. Some Arab piece of flotsam and jetsam murdered his daughters. I'm watching that go across the screen. Yasser Abdal Saeed killed his daughters for being too American. We invite people to our country, we embrace them, they do the right paperwork, and then they come over here and they act like savages. And they wonder, and they call us racist. And they call us bigots, and they call... How could... And they're showing the pictures of these girls, I guess it's two girls, just beautiful young girls. One looks like a teenager, beautiful green-eyed girl, the other girl is probably teen, preteen looking. And this guy killed his own daughters because they brought shame to the family. I don't care how bad you mess up, Lou. I will never kill you in an honor killing, I promise.
You wouldn't be able to.
Oh, I know. I probably wouldn't be able to. What do you mean I wouldn't be able to? Here, I have a fork right here. Oh, actually, it's a paring knife.
It's a shank.
But it's... You know, I didn't mean to go this route, but I'm just seeing this in front of me on Fox News. It's polluting my show. But it just angers me that we're supposed to be tolerant of everything. It's their culture. You know, I told you guys the other day about the illegal alien, third time DUI, killed a nun. Now, finally, people are starting to get angry about it. Here in Fresno, homicides are up. 90% of them are illegal alien gang on gang. L.A. County has had 12 women killed in a short period of time. In L.A. County, black women, some of them just sitting in their cars by Hispanic assailants. There is a genocide war going on in the L.A. area from Hispanic invaders trying to get rid of the black people from their communities. And until today, I haven't seen anything in the papers about it. Not at all. We embrace these invaders, we embrace their cultures, and we just let them do whatever they want. They walk all over us, make them super citizens. And then the minute we go, hey, wait a minute, guys, this may not be right, they call us Nazis, racists, Klansmen, fools. And it's just super sad. Speaking of that, I have received contact from... who did I receive contact from? I got to look it up here again. You guys are going to... You know, I've had some pretty controversial topics on here. I've had the Klan on. I've had people talking about Israel. I had... That's not one. I got to find it here. Okay. Let me open this up again. Okay. The wife of Gary Yarborough... You may not know who that is. Susan Yarborough wants to come on the show and talk about her husband, Gary, who is serving... He's been in prison for 25 years on a 25-year sentence. I'll tell you what he did here in a minute. and they are completely messing with him. He has no access to the internet. He's in, I think it's a prison, a supermax prison in Colorado. And if you guys know who he is, you know, I'm going to be surprised. I knew who he was just because I'm from Colorado, and I remember the case very, very intimately. Well, Miss Yarborough wants to come on and talk about how they're jacking her husband up. They're saying that he's been associating with white supremacists and militia guys and stuff on the internet, even though he's in maximum security 23 and a half hours a day, has no access to the internet, and it's obvious that somebody is impersonating him on these sites and doing stuff to make him look bad. And he's up for his parole. And they said, yeah, but you're associating with people even though it's physically impossible. Well, he was a member of a little group known as the Order that went around blowing up, went around taking out armored cars, counterfeiting. They were moving to the Pacific Northwest to create an all-white separatist nation. They had some Nazi influence in there. Not a lot of stuff I agreed with. They did kill Alan Berg in Denver at KOA Radio. He wasn't associated with this. Her husband was associated specifically with, counterfeiting. Which I have no problem with that because the federal government's been counterfeiting. What I want to know when we come back, I want to get your opinions through the chat room. Should I have this woman on and should I talk about what the federal government is doing to keep her husband from getting out, even though he served his 25 years? Now they're trying to keep him in, saying that he's associating with people. So we're going to roll some music here in about 10 seconds. And I want to know if we should have Susan Yarborough on. I told her that I would, but I want to see what your opinion is. I'm known for having anyone on and letting them share their opinions, even if I don't agree with them. We're going to be back after this setup that Lou has done here with music and such. You're listening to Dutch Jones. We'll be right back. And can you do it?
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
The lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. So well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain, knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
New world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in
there. Put out all points, bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order.
Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat, an emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
Unfortunately, no neat, quickie, shifty sound effects from Lou today. He's just sitting on the bed enjoying relaxing while the show's going on. We don't have a soundboard anymore. The one we had died. We still got the big one up at the cave, but it's about the size of a microwave, and I don't like hauling it around. It's not bigger. It's the same footprint as a microwave. I don't know if you guys can still hear the theme music in the background. Hopefully you can. Oh, it just stopped. Okay. We're back. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program for the 5th of August, 2010. 6th? Yeah. I think I missed my brother's birthday. Phone's over here. I missed my brother's birthday. Oh, man, I'm a bad guy. 2010. We are live right now, but we have no phone. The only way you can get to me is to come in through the chat room or to contact me on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and look for Dutch Jones, and you'll find me there. There's also some MySpace stuff, but I haven't been able to get to that. I want to welcome all of our listeners today and all of the off-the-clock pod people. We appreciate you listening very, 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 very much. No, they don't look like actual pod people. They look like you or me, and they walk among us, and we won't know them until they decide to rise up and take over the rest of the non-pod people. See, I don't download stuff and listen to it. I like to hear it live. It kind of creeps me out if I'm listening to a radio show and I know it's pre-recorded. It freaks me out. Conj44 is one of the pod people. Thank you. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it greatly.
He's normal today.
Yeah, he's normal today. No. But I don't know. I like knowing it's live. It just kind of messes with my head. I don't even like stuff on time delay. I grew up listening to the live radio. And I used to hate it, you know, on Sundays when you listen to Dr. Demento or America's Top 40. And then I used to listen to that, and somebody goes, you know, that's recorded back east, and it's like on 2 hours earlier everywhere else. And here in Colorado, we get it on a, you know, so you can't call in. I hate that. So I don't like the Rush Limbaugh show or any of those things. He should just talk. If he's going to be really, if he really cares about the cause, he'll get on the radio and talk all day. He'll do an 8-hour shift and let people from each region call in. Otherwise, it's just an East Coast radio, and the rest of us have to get, you know, recordings. But that doesn't mean listening to the pods is a bad thing. I really like that. It's a great tool. I'm glad Olima does it. She's in there. Yeah, I saw her making comments. I can't see her in the list right now. I think we got more people than we had space for the chatting window. The email is DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. DutchJonesShow@yahoo.com. And send me your emails, your show ideas, death threats, treasure maps, pictures of your kids, whatever you want to send in. Yeah, it's fine. It keeps me going. Sometimes I get really bummed out during the day, and I just go and I read listener mail, and about 1 in 20 are mean. About 1 in 20 are mean, but it's worth it. You know, I get a couple mean ones a day. That's true. Let's see. What else? Before we went to the break, I was talking to you about having the wife of the incarcerated member of the order. I really do want your input on that. You guys can email me if you don't want to talk about it in the chat room. I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not going to have the person on, but I'd like to see what you think. Because I'm curious as to how they justify keeping someone in jail past what they did. You know, they were trying to do that to sex offenders. Remember child molesters? They tried to keep them in longer, and they said, no, that's unconstitutional. You can't hold a sex offender longer than what the judge sent him in for, what the statutes are. But now you've got this guy who he's not anymore, a white supremacist. At least there's no evidence that he still is. He's not a member of any prison gang or anything like that. He's not affiliated with anyone. And he did his 25 years, and he wants to get out, and now the federal government doesn't want to let him out, making up stuff. And that's what happens. That's what they're going to probably do to Dr. Dino. That's what they're probably going to do to me when they get me. You know, oh, you got 8 years for sedition. And that eighth year, they'll say, oh, wait a minute. We heard you were talking about revolution again in the chow hall. You know, you can't do that. We're going to hold you another indefinite period of time.
Another year.
Yeah, we found another year we forgot to give you. They'll continue to do that. If they can do it to one person, they can do it to all of us. Now, I told you guys I was going to talk. I can't go into specifics on this next story, but I found out about a militia guy on picket duty that did something really stupid. And it just crushed me because we've come too far. We've been doing too much. How can anyone who wants to be involved in this cause still be making piker mistakes? Folks, you've got to have your gear together. You've got to have your mindset ready. And there's several things you got to do. So I can't give you the exact story because I promised the source that I wouldn't do it. And I don't want to embarrass the good people that were involved. I wish I could embarrass the idiot that was involved. But I can't do it. Picket duty. You send somebody out on a to guard something, a guard post. But you never do it to one guy. You always send people out in groups of. Let's just start right here. Somebody asked a great question. What is picket duty? It's when you're making fences. No, that's not. It's when you're picketing. When the Teamsters come out and protest. You know, they don't get enough donuts. If you send somebody out on guard duty. You do it in pairs, minimum. If you don't have the resources to put security out at night where it's safe for that person, then you shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it. Two people will help each other make better decisions. They can cover each other. They're more observant. They'll keep each other what? Awake. Lou? I'll just make sure you're awake. and never ever send anybody. As MPs, we went out in 3-man teams, and then that way, if somebody needed to sleep, you could do it. 3-man team minimum. This person was on guard duty. They were standing in the middle of the road, which was stupid. You should stand off to the side. A vehicle came up. Rather than identifying the vehicle as a hostile, friendly, neutral, civilian, park ranger, whatever, person takes a shot at the vehicle. Fortunately, the person also didn't train in marksmanship, so he didn't hit anything. But I can't believe that this is happening in the year 2010 in a country where we are in a martial attitude already. Those of you that want to be in the militia movement and you don't have a militia near you, I don't care what it takes. You don't eat lunch for a month. You save up your money and you go get training. And I don't care if you were in the military 15 years ago, you go get current training. Period. You learn everything you can about whatever weapon it is you have access to, and you learn how to deploy it in a tactical manner that is safe for everyone. Because the last thing this cause needs is some idiot out there on the border shooting another Minuteman, shooting an innocent family, shooting illegal aliens that are doing nothing but walking across. And a lot of you think, well, we should just shoot all of them. No. The minute that starts happening, a warning shot. There's no such thing as warning shots, Warland. If you have to bring that weapon to bear, you have to be ready to kill whatever it is you're bringing it to bear against. No warning shots, no near misses. Which I've never understood that phrase. It's ridiculous. It's uncalled for. Now, if you don't have those kind of skills, you can't afford to get those skills, then you tell the militia that you're working on the border with, put me in the back. Have me cook chow. Have me run a radio. Stop overestimating your skills. It's not going to do anybody any good. And the minute that something like this happens, it's going to take us back to zero again. They won't allow. They'll come up with, look, this one Minuteman Barney Fifed himself, shot himself in the foot, or God forbid, shoot somebody else or shoot somebody's kid. I can tell you right now, if I'd have been coming up that road and some idiot Ricky Rescuer Rambo wannabe had shot at my vehicle, I would have pulled into the bush, got out, and emptied a magazine into their location. Period. If I take fire, if rounds come at me, it is on. I don't know why this guy didn't get his butt kicked. I can tell you with the Campo Minutemen, with the other militias I was in, if that had happened, it would have been all over but the mopping up of the grease that was left over and the hiding of the body. He's right, Conj 44. The media would have had a field day with this situation. And I'm not going to go into it any more detail on that other than for it to be a teachable moment for the good people who listen to this radio show. It shows failure on all levels, on who's ever responsible for putting a person out there by themselves, without comm, without signaling devices, and not proper training or general orders. Every guard mount has to have general orders. What do you do if you see a vehicle? How do you stop a vehicle? I trained our people up here at the church on how to make contact with vehicles coming in. Just to our parking lot. I had a whole class on it. And we practiced it. How do you approach a vehicle? What do you do if a vehicle fails to stop? Now, granted, I've had the experience of working... Warland's asking a question. Yes, it did. But that's all I can go into there. I can't go into any more detail. I'm actually trying to reach the person that did this. I sent him an email saying, how's it going? You know, how'd your weekend go? Kind of thing, last weekend. If we can't just expect people to show up and stick them on the border. We can't expect people to show up and be part of our militia. You hear it in my invitations. There is a process. Yes, everyone has the right to be in a militia. Everyone has the right to carry a weapon and defend themselves, but not everybody has the knowledge or the ability to serve safely. With great duty comes great responsibility, right? With this right, I'm not going to say privilege, but this right of carrying weapons around me, you better know what you're doing. I am growing sick and tired of hearing these kind of stories, folks. People that I know really well in my own group, I just want to slap them. Because month after month of training, I say the basic rules. Don't put your weapon at anybody. Don't put your finger on the trigger. Know what your target is. Know what's behind your target. I go through all, treat every weapon as if it's loaded. And week after week that we have trainings, there's always one or two people that just don't get it. So is that, does that mean that I'm going to have to find a whole corps of unarmed people? We have to make everybody medics? Utilizing your people for their skills is a key leadership requirement in the militia. And if you've got one medic, you don't stick them out on guard duty alone, especially. You don't make them a point man. You don't have them go out covert operations. If that's your medic, he's essential to the well-being of the rest of your unit. I'm confused by this. And I'm not beating up on the one militia, because if they're listening, they know who they are. I've seen it just about every militia I've been in where, because of shortage of people, you know, that's a very reasonable excuse. But you don't do that. I mean, when I was with the Minutemen, with the Campo Minutemen, if there were three of us, you know what we did? We all got at the same location and put our vehicles back to back, and we took turns sleeping, and the other two would watch while the other one... Because I know it's hard to stay up all night. I'm yawning during this show. A minimum of three. Two is almost unacceptable. One is unfathomable to me. That you would risk your life. This is serious stuff. People are going to start dying. I don't want it to be at the hand of our own people. And I don't want to hear about Minutemen fell asleep, throat got slit. What? We've come too far in this game for these kind of mistakes to be made. And I see it in my own militia. But I can tell you, I wouldn't take those two individuals that I know I have problems with and say, here, take a pair of binoculars and take a radio and go up on that hill by yourself. One, I would check to make sure they had batteries. I'd do a comm check. I would come up with a secondary signaling system if they don't have comm, flashlights, smoke signals. You know, do the thing like they do in all the old movies. Like, ah-ha! You know, you do a chirp, a whistle, an Indian howl. It's sad. I thought we were so far beyond these kind of things. We're at war, people, on multiple fronts. And I know the people that are predominantly listening to this right now, they get it, they know. But a man's got to know his limitations. Clint Eastwood said that in a couple of his movies. You got to know. Do not push yourself because you don't want to be embarrassed, or you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing. I can't stress it enough. Training is more important than gear. Training is more important than gear. Do you understand that? Does it sink in? I would rather you're out there with a broom handle and training how to handle it than actually having any gear. I would rather you spent 5 hours a day training with a broomstick than out on the range, you know, for the entire day, you know, putting rounds down range. issuing blanks. Yeah, use them as decoys. That's what's going to end up happening. I know if I've got a Gomer pile in my unit, what?
It was talking about WikiLinks.
What about WikiLinks getting in trouble?
Yeah, it said they want Pentagon one of them to return files.
Yeah, the Pentagon is telling WikiLinks they have to delete all their files that were leaked. I love that. So much for the First Amendment, right? So much for truth. Thanks, Lou. Oh, my foot's itching. We had ants come in today. My feet got bit. Ah, does that mean I stop transmitting when that happens?
No.
Okay, screen went blank. But yeah, it would be funny to hand some newbie a weapon and just put blanks. And always, it reminds me of the first Tremors movie. I can't remember his name. Oh, Maxine Waters is on TV. They were trying to escape, and he handed one of the kids a gun, but he didn't load it because he wouldn't give him a loaded gun, but it helped him run faster. Yeah, Repo Man, blanks get the job done too. But no, I wouldn't use blanks. I would let the person know that they're not called to do that. We're all given gifts. I am not a ranger. I am not, a pathfinder anymore. I know with my physical abilities it might be better to stick me on a hill watching over the compound. I can still, you know, thread an eye of a needle at a couple hundred yards. So I'm more useful that way. So I wouldn't go, hey, you know, just so my ego doesn't get hurt, if people don't think I'm, you know, not dedicated. Hey, I want to be out there. Send me out on that patrol. Because I know what's going to happen. They're going to end up either being slow because of me, leaving me behind, or carrying my fat butt. What are you doing, Lou? Getting the music ready? Pride cannot have a place in this movement. Pride can have no place in this movement. It's not about having the best gear. It's not about having the best uniform. It's about having the best attitude, the willingness to serve, the willingness to sacrifice, and the willingness to do everything you can to make sure that your buddies, your cohorts, come back safe every time. And if I have to look at people that are standing next to me and wonder if they're going to shoot me in the middle of the night, how am I going to get anything done? How are any of us going to get anything done? What's the point? Why even show up? Why not just turn everything over to the New World Order and say, yeah, you're right. We're not worthy of self-governance. We can't even do this right. And that doesn't mean turn away people that are... I'm just trying to find a nice way of saying this. Rear echelon mofos, remps. People that need to be in the rear, they have a role to play. They have a role to play. Not everybody's a frontline troop. I know I'm not. And you as a leader, if you're chosen to be a leader, you got to be able to not worry about people's personal, you know, I don't want to bruise his ego by telling him he can't carry a weapon anymore because he's too dangerous. Would you rather he walks around and ends up getting some of your people killed out of accidents or negligence or being overly excited? How is that saving America? How is that serving in the holy cause of liberty where you would let people do that? We can't worry about hurting people's feelings. I mean, I've gotten good at that. You know, people get mad at me because I'm just very direct. I don't want to say cold. I'm very direct.
Your glasses are stupid.
Yeah, Lou. Lou's over there telling me my glasses are stupid. Now I got to beat up on you during the break. See, why'd you do that, Lou? I got comfortable. That means I have to get up, come across the room, and beat you with this empty soda can. I'll just throw it at you. So, people, our biggest enemy is not the New World Order. Our biggest enemy is not illegal aliens. Our biggest enemy are our own shortfalls. Our own sheep that we got to wade through. Our own people who overestimate their ability rather than take a humble attitude. So when you're sitting down and assessing this, please be very realistic. Please go out of your way to do a fair assessment of where you can serve in the cause. What are you doing? You're looking at the time. It's 5:54. I keep yawning and I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe I didn't sleep really well last night. It's kind of weird. We're going to come back after the break. We're going to be on Liberty Tree Radio. I've got some other articles to talk about. Maybe talking about putting together, you know, how to put together training to help fight this kind of thing. You know, some ideas that I might have. I'm going to check my email when I get off, see if anybody sent an email in here. I don't know how far to push it. I don't know how far to flog this horse. But I think it's foundational to the structure of the movement. Is being able to judge people, find the ones that are trainable, utilize the ones that aren't in non-dangerous positions so we don't... Man, after hearing this today, I dread getting up, you know, over the next few days. Because it's usually things like this come in clusters, and there's going to be something like, you know, Arizona Citizens Militia gets in gunfight with Arizona Volunteer Militia over, not pizza, but like over mistaken identity. You know, you're going to have fratricide because these two groups are going to be operating in the same area and not communicate. And maybe that's what we'll talk about, more communication, because I think communication is the key. Because the more we get to know each other, the more we have these protocols set up before, the less likely these things are to happen. You're supposed to have challenge and answer codes. There are certain ways that you approach a known perimeter in a vehicle so you don't look aggressive when you're coming up on your own people. Prime example, we lost one of the greatest Christian generals of all time, Stonewall Jackson, because he wandered into his own pickets and got shot by his own men. As great as he was, they didn't have a protocol for that. Of course, the lines were moving and there was, you know, the chaos of the battlefield, but
We don't have that yet, so why are we still having problems? You got 2 minutes. Here, turn it towards you if it makes you feel better so you can see it, son. I don't have to see what... And we're not even at war yet. I don't know who wrote that, but friendly fire shouldn't even be happening now. I can tell you that in all the times that I've been on the border with Campo Minutemen, I've never so much as had a guy reach for his pistol when I've wandered into camp because we had it all figured out. Hello, Sunshine. Sunshine's here, of course known as Stacy. Did you have a good drive back?
Yeah.
Okay, goody, goody. We're getting ready for a break here. I'm just using the little mic here. Stacy's back. Go ahead and start playing some music now, Lou. We're going to play some music now for the break. I want to hug my wife and welcome her home. Get your shoes off, relax, and we'll be back after the break. We're going to have Liberty Tree Radio joining us, so be nice, everyone. We'll have guests in the Dutch Jones living room of thought and consciousness. While you're on break, go to dutchjones.tk, and if you haven't yet, kick in $5. Stacy said we got some more donations, didn't we? She's not sure. And I got something to talk about. We keep getting our checking account raided by some scumbag out there. So,
I'm tired of it.
Yeah, it's sick. Somebody just stole $300 from us from our banking account. We don't know how they're doing it.
I'm sick of it.
I think it's Stacy playing Farmville. It's the revenuers coming around. The revenuers on Farmville caught her growing corn mash or something. So she's just not telling me. It's what it is. Her moonshine. She got caught moonshining on Facebook. Okay, guys, we'll be back after the break. I'm Dutch Jones. Stick in there. Don't go anywhere. Play the music. Play that funky white music, Lou Boy.
This vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world
order. Attention. Government is the problem. This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Okay. Am I ready now? Okay. Did I make the switch? You're supposed to do this, Lou. You're supposed to go three and point like to me. Yeah, yeah, like Wayne's World. No, that's the way we actually do it in real radio. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones radio program, brought to you by my family. Sponsored by my family, funded by my family.
Liberty Radio.
We're on Liberty Tree Radio. Stacy's all giggly in the corner. She's trying to say Liberty Tree Radio, and it's like a tongue saying Liberty Tree, Liberty Truck, Liberty Radio Tree House. I'm not making funny. I don't know. I don't know if they can hear you over this little mic. Stacy says hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. It is August the 6th, 2010. It is a Friday. We are still mobile because we're trapped. We ran out of funding. As I was saying before the break, somebody took $300 out of our savings, checkings, bank account. Seems like every 2 months we get hacked. I don't know if it's because we do a lot of work on the internet using eBay and PayPal and all that, but it just seems weird. So we're stuck here for a while until the bank figures out that that wasn't a legitimate. Hopefully they'll figure it out and we won't end up losing it. I'm getting tired of it. It's about every 2 months this happens. I'm beginning to think we're just targeted by somebody and they're just doing it to be funny. It just causes a lot of heart anguish and everything. And it's just weird. It's just very strange that it just keeps happening over and over and over again. It's almost like we have to hide our account. I don't know if we should go to Walmart and get one of those Walmart cards or something. Just do everything with gift cards. But anyway, we're here. We're really glad that it's Liberty. Is Ed in there, Lou? You're looking at the chat room. I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We are up. We welcome our Liberty Tree Radio fans. We welcome people listening on Facebook, MySpace, and all the other places that the embedded player has been placed. I Googled it again last night and found that it was pretty much everywhere. Again, hundreds of people have taken our player and embedded it, so that's great. We enjoy that. Hopefully, I like to think that it's individuals that are rebroadcasting it over FM or CB, like CB Channel 2 up there in New York, or, you know, two-meter stuff, or, you know, 80-meter band, you know, whatever, shortwave, whatever you want to do, you have the permission to do it. Just try and do the whole show in context. Don't, like, edit me or speed it up or slow it down so I sound weird, and please don't chop it up so I sound like Elvin and the Chipmunks, debating communist thought or something. I wouldn't like that at all. Before the break, we were talking about it's crucial in whether you're a brand new militia just starting out, you're a lone wolf looking for a militia, or you're a well-established militia. Training is the foundation of everything. And I was relaying about an incident that was unconfirmed but related to me about where somebody almost shot one of, you know, their militia commander because they weren't paying attention on guard duty. There are so many things you can do to circumvent friendly fire situations, and that's what I'm going to talk about. Historically, there have been some pretty terrible cases of friendly fire. A lot of the stuff in Vietnam, friendly fire is probably where the term really got taken into the public's vernacular. People, there was a movie on about friendly fire with Carol Burnett. And it's just funny that, I left my wedding ring in the bathroom. Thank you, honey. I was doing some dishes. But you don't have to go, in American history, I brought it up just before the break, Stonewall Jackson, killed by his own men. You know, what a tragedy that was. How things might have been different had Stonewall survived. There's no reason in learning from everybody else's mistakes and experiences that this should still be an issue.
When you're setting up a guard mount, I'm just going to give you some very basic things. Your guards have to be trained. They have to be trained in all the basic infantryman skills. Plus, you don't just take a guy who follows orders on a platoon level and say, okay, he's a guard now. Guarding is a very specified and very specific skill set. Now, granted, I was an MP, so I take it to heart. And I'm not degrading the roles of infantry guys or airborne infantry or air assault or any of those things, but just as those things require certain skill sets, so does guarding. And there's so many different types of guards, but for today's show, I'm just going to focus on entry guards and traffic control point guards, which is what the incident that was relayed to me is talking about. When you choose people to be on guard duty, you probably don't have, everybody gets rotated through, which is usually the custom. There are no special orders usually given other than, hey, nobody's supposed to get in here. I remember one time I was picked to guard the brand new post exchange on Fort AP Hill before it opened. And Fort AP Hill's this little teeny tiny post. I was TDY'd there from temporary duty from Fort George G. Meade up in Maryland. And I was told by the post commander, who was a colonel, Colonel Quinn, and he said, no one gets into this PX until I tell you to let them in and I cut the ribbon. And he was a colonel. Well, this two-star Air Force general comes up and he tries to get in. And I and my partner, here's another rule, you never just leave one guard when you can have two. We had two guards at the front door, this Air Force colonel. I saluted him. He said, good morning, sir. And he wanted to get in. I said, sir, it is my general, or it is my specific orders that no one is to enter the PX until the post commander announces that it is open. And he's like, well, yeah, I got to get in. And I said, no, you may not gain entrance. My specific orders are, and I repeated them to again, and he goes, well, do you have some way to get someone over here? And I said, yes. I had a radio, which is key. You have to give them, any guard you give, each guard must have their own communications device, especially if they split up. You don't send them out there with one radio and say, well, one's enough. You send them out there with radios, backup radios, extra batteries, whatever you have supplies of. And that's why it's better to plan ahead. Well, finally, I got on the radio, called dispatch, had the post commander come over, one alpha. He showed up, shook hands with this general, and the general started to dress him down, and he came over to me and says, is that true? Corporal so-and-so, is it true that you denied access to this two-star general? I said, sir, yes, sir. You told me no one gets in but you, and that was my specific orders, and I followed him. He turned around and said, good, and he dressed down the general for harassing me. And it turns out the general was an Air Force general who was in charge of AFES, which is the people that are in charge of the... He was like the executive director of Walmart for military bases. Let's put it that way for those of you that don't understand it. I didn't know that the Air Force is handled the PX. It's never entered my mind, nothing I ever cared about. But I was basically telling the president of the company he couldn't come in because the store manager told me no. But those were my orders. You know, and barring a fire in the building and letting firemen in, I wasn't going to violate my specific orders. And you have to have general orders. And some of the general orders that they gave us, like, you know, I will not abandon my post until properly relieved. I'll report all special circumstances to the commander of the relief. Now, I could give you all those, but you're not going to remember them. But whatever your militia has, you need to come up with general orders for guarding. A general protocol that if this happens, this is what you do. One, you don't leave your post until properly relieved. And every relief guard mount should show up early so that they can get a briefing from the guard. Because I remember some things like if I was on guard duty at the front gate, oh yeah, we've got protesters. You know, they're protesting that we bombed Libya. They said they're going to come back at noon with the media. So you need to pass that on to the next guard and the commander of the guard, sergeant of the guard, whatever you want to give it. You should always have a centralized contact point to within your tactical operations center. Fire guard, watch commander, whatever you want to call them, somebody is to be awake. That's why it's always better to have, what, two people instead of one? So that when those guards are out on your perimeter at your gate and they have something that is beyond their specific instructions or general orders, they have someone to ask. So somebody can go wake the old man up and find out what to do in this situation. But militias, they don't want to get into this. And I'm not saying all of them, but it's bizarre. Oh, that's too militaristic. Well, if you don't do it, you're going to end up having friendly fire. You're going to lose sentries. because you don't practice good guard management. I learned it in the military. I carried it over into civilian world. I don't care if I was doing security guard at Safeway and I was in charge of two or three other guys. We ran everything the same way. You have to have a challenge and answer. Now, do you guys know what that is? You've seen it in all the war movies. Yes, Ed's saying, I'm looking at Ed's all SOP, standard operating procedures for these things. You can't go doing anything else until you've set up standard operating procedures for all executable functions of your militia. Everything. I don't care if it's from latrines to where to park all the trucks on range day. People go, well, I don't want to do that, man. If I wanted that, I'd join the military. Well, there's a certain basic minimum level of logistical function that you have, or it's not going to work. If you think you're just going to come up and run around the woods playing paintball with real guns, it's not going to work. I was saying before I saw what Ed posted, challenge and answer. As MPs, when we'd set up a tactical traffic point, a TCP, a traffic control point, after a certain time period, a curfew period, after 10 p.m., no vehicles are allowed to enter without giving answer and challenge, and that would change daily. It would be anything, and they're not supposed to be typical two-word. You know, you'd say smoke, and the guy'd say white. You know, you don't want to do that. Or I remember we had one guy, he kept using the one, white pony, because he liked the song, Ride the White Pony. It's got to be two non-related things. When I was in charge of it, I'd come up with food and geographic location. Like I'd say spaghetti, Devil's Tower, or Wyoming. You know, so you don't want Devil's Tower, that's two words. But you'd say spaghetti, Wyoming. And it would change daily, but you would brief your guards on it. And anyone leaving the post has to know those. And they have to be done out far enough in advance that if you have a patrol going out and they're not coming back for 3 days, they have to know what the challenge and answer is going to be. Or there's going to be some confusion, and usually confusion leads to stupid mistakes, and sometimes stupid mistakes leads to very serious consequences. If you can't use the verbal challenges, you use visual challenges. You give different strands of fabric on epaulets that rotate on different days, and you change it up. Today's color is brown. The next day is green. The next day is black. You know, you keep them subdued colors. So that you know people without that uniform of the day, epaulet change or ribbon change, they're not supposed to be walking around the gates that day. It'll help you, you know, if you're a real big militia or in a real big operation, that'll help you pick out infiltrators. Now sometimes people are just stupid and they do the wrong thing. It's the same reason they would change uniform of the day for the MPs. Stupid things like sleeves up, sleeves down, soft cap, metal pot. It wasn't just to annoy us, it was so that we could pick out, you know, one of these guys just doesn't belong. Grooming habits, things like that. You've got to come up with these things. You've got to come up with duress codes. Let's say it's a post-collapse scenario and we're doing a rebuilding scenario and we're in charge and the counter-revolution has started. I leave post to go out and gather food and I'm coming back with somebody that you didn't see me go out with and I say, hey Chuck, how's the fishing going? And the word could be fishing or whatever. They know that the guy that's with me is holding me prisoner or maybe has my family. And we had those, especially on foreign bases, we had those all the time. If my wife called into the MP station, my first wife at the time, and said, could you tell Sergeant so-and-so to stop at the store and pick up this, then we knew something was wrong, that she was compromised. And I thank the Lord it never happened because I doubt she'd be smart enough to use it. Protocols, SOPs, security issues. How do you stop an oncoming vehicle? Do you even try to stop it, or is your job just to radio in so they know it's coming because you're going to get creamed by it? Do you have warning signs out a half mile out said warning, approaching traffic control point, dim lights? And then that way, if you know somebody doesn't dim their lights, they may have nefarious intentions. The week that we bombed Libya, I was on gate duty, and this car, the speed limit was stupid, 2.5 miles an hour at the gate. It actually said 2.5 miles per hour, Fort Davidson. And this vehicle's coming, one, it's going faster, and it didn't dim its lights, and it was after dark. So immediately, I got behind the barricade as I see this guy coming, threw down the arm so he couldn't get through, got the spike strip ready, and with my left foot kicked the backup button that was inside the guard shack all at the same time. Because why? I had trained to do it. It was a protocol that I knew. And it pulls up, and here's some Arab dude trying to get into the post, and he's yelling and screaming at me. So first thing I do is unflap my big, ridiculous cavalry holster that's over my 45. You know, the old Army black holsters that they gave us. I was fortunate I at least had a 45 instead of the guys who got stuck with the Beretta 92F. And this guy starts to reach under the seat. First thing I do is I grab him by the face, start banging his head around inside the car so I can pull my weapon. But because I was smart enough to push the I'm in trouble button, quickly, like every MP vehicle within range was there. Now, this guy ended up just being a moron. He didn't speak English. He was, you know, some Farsi-speaking dude. Probably didn't even know we had just bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's, you know, adopted kids or whatever. But who knows what could have happened the other way. Had I not, at least, you know, maybe I'd have got taken out if it was a suicide bomber, but at least I let people know they were coming. There were multiple layers. I had my radio on. I could have hit a hazard button on the radio. Now you're saying, well, we don't have trouble buttons on these FRS radios that we use. Yes, sometimes you do. They have alert buttons.
Sometimes people mess with them.
Yeah. And you can make the alert go off. Of course, you don't know who's doing it with these ones, but there are technological things you can do. Do the militias have anything like a boot camp, Moreland's asking? The bigger ones do. And there are many, many, many manuals out there, like starting your own militia. There's special forces manuals on how to put together a guerrilla force. But as far as going somewhere, no. The bigger militias, you know, they do have that kind of training. I know ours do. We have basic training for our militia people. Ours are usually a four-day course that we put them through. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but you're required to have those courses before you can even wear a weapon on any of our future training. And even then, people have taken those multiple times and are still not ready. And it ends up being my job to tell them they're not doing the right thing and they need to seek some training on their own personal time, because we're done offering free training to somebody who just doesn't get it. I mean, we've had intense one-on-one training with a couple of people and they still don't get it. That tells you, hey, can you type? How are you at cooking? Maybe you'd like to be in medical. Can you carry a... Because every role is important. Just because you don't have what it takes to carry a rifle doesn't mean you're not going to be serving a purpose. But everybody in the militia should at least know rudimentary use of a rifle. Just like in the Army, everybody's a rifleman, period. I remember when we were doing some training stuff back at Fort George G. Meade, and we basically locked down the whole post and were pretending that there was, you know, war in the United States. We had a two-front aggressive war, you know, they you know, red on blue type stuff, blue on red. And all of a sudden, this busload of people show up. They're really nice-looking uniforms. Look like they had never, you know, been out in the field. And there's these, and they said they asked where the military police tactical operations center was. I sent them to the provost marshal's office, and it turns out they were the U.S. Army band from Washington D.C., and their job was to augment us. Every one of them had a basic training of 13 weeks, but after that they went to, I guess, band camp. But they at least knew how to use their weapons, and we had no problems with them. And what we did is we teamed them up. We made them the third wheel. We'd have two MPs and one band person. And we put them in, we didn't stick them out on the bunkers, you know, where the ammo bunkers were. We stuck them at, you know, interior traffic control points. We had them, you know, protecting the high school, the elementary school, that kind of stuff. Being a leader in the militia does not mean that you diminish your role as a leader. Is that right? You don't say, well, we're a militia, anybody can leave when they want, we're all here on our own accord. No, you have to be just as good, and if not, better than a full-time standing army coordinator. So I don't know what I'm going to call it, an officer or whatever. I wasn't, you know, you can be a sergeant, an NCO. You've got to be able to read people and manage people and put them where they need to be. You need to come up with protocols that will make it safe for everyone but still be able to reach your mission objectives. And you have to have mission objectives. If you don't have, if you don't tell your guards what their mission is, they're just going to go out there and sleep. They're going to go out there and get bored. You've got to give them specific parameters. What are the parameters of your post? How far are you to patrol it? Do you stand in the middle of the road with a flashlight waving it? Do you hide off in the bushes and just observe and report? What assets do you have? Every time you go on guard duty, what should you have? A flashlight with extra batteries. A red lens for that flashlight in case you needed to signal. A radio that functions with extra batteries. You will do a comm check before you leave the perimeter of the control of the tactical operations center. Food, water, proper uniform, proper gear for that mission, whether it's cold weather, desert, whatever. You will have, if there's a hard line, you will test it when you get there. There will be a logbook that will be maintained at the position, usually, unless it's a tactical situation or, you know, something like that. And that logbook will be passed on, and all things that you know will be put in that written version as well as verbally to the next person that comes out. You will tell them when they will be relieved, when chow will be delivered to them. How will they handle potty breaks? You're going to laugh at this stuff, but if you don't do this, it will hamper the mission of those guards. If you don't tell them, hey, I've had it happen where they just said, okay, you've got an 8-hour stand on this guard duty. You're not going to get to go number two. You better go number two now before you get out there. You can go use a bush to urinate, but we don't want you, either one of you, taking time to go dig a cat hole or anything. Period. As long as they know the parameters of it, they can function within that. Should they maintain light and sound discipline? Are they to challenge every vehicle that comes through? And with what challenge, how do they do it? Is it verbal? Are they looking for stickers on the bumper? Like with Camp One Minutemen, I can give this one up because I don't do it anymore. We put an upside down cross. No, not because we're pagans or anything. It was just something that was easy to look at. They didn't mean it to be an upside down cross. It just ended up being that way. On the driver's side, front and rear bumper and reflective tape. That doesn't mean that everyone coming through is secure, but it gives us a first layer of elimination. Hey, that guy has no indicator on his bumper. Let's stop him. You understand? Not a big fan of ID cards for the militia, but you should at least know who's coming in. A roster of people. If you're doing a muster on the border and you know you've got people coming from across the country, you might want to tell the security guards who they're expecting on that traffic control point. You might want to say, hey, we're expecting 2 vehicles from Wisconsin, 5 from California. These are their names that were assigned to them, their radio calls when they come in. They were told to switch to Channel 2 when approaching this area. Be listening to Channel 2 on one radio. Be listening to Channel 6, which is the Tactical Operations Center frequency. But, they'll check in. That's what we did in the Campo Minutemen. I'd be coming down the hill on Nathan Bedford Forest Road. I love the name of the road. And out of Campo to the border, and I would say, I'd get on Channel 2 and say, this is Magnum. Are there any Campo Minutemen on this frequency? And then the guy who was doing check-ins would say, yes, I'm at the monument for the Pacific Crest Trail. This is your first place to check in. Please approach slowly so you don't kick up dust. And when you get into the open area, turn off your headlights and leave your running lights on. They would give us specific instructions like that. And then they would ask how many in your party, that kind of stuff, and then the rest would be done face-to-face after we gave them the challenge. This stuff isn't that hard. You may be going, wow, this sounds like a lot to remember. But what it prevents is idiots shooting at their militia commanders in the middle of the night. I mean, the Lord is looking over us after this case that was relayed to me today. We're so blessed that nothing bad happened. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is take no one at face value, take no one on their word. You have to have a way to test everyone. You have to have drills. I don't care if some guy comes, he says, I just got off duty in Iraq and I've been doing vehicle searches and traffic stops the whole time I was there for 3 tours. Set up training scenarios within a safe area using broomsticks if you have to and see if these people really know what they say they know. It's easy for all of us to go, yeah, back in high school, I ran a 4-minute mile, so I'm okay. Time and distance, people. Time and distance depreciates the truthfulness of a man's statement. The older I get, the better I was. Well, we don't want to live on people's recollections and claims. We want to know what they really can do. How do they function? Do they know not to sweep their buddies? Do they even keep good muzzle consciousness when one of the guards goes forward to take a peek in the window? Where do you position yourselves? All these things have got to be worked out, folks, before you get to the border. Now, if you show up on the border, somebody's called you to show to the border, and you ask them, hey, do you guys have a guard training thing going on? Do you have a guard briefing going on? When is it? You know, what do I need to bring to it? And if they say no, we don't have that, red flag number one goes up. Not that they're bad or anything. They just don't get it. And what I would do in that situation is say, well, you know what? I've got some background in this. Would you mind if I did that? And if they say no, go ahead and do it. That's cool. But if they say, we don't need to do that. Nah, we're all friends here. We don't need to do that. This is what I would do. If you went down there with four or five buddies, said, well, here's what I'm going to request. If you want us to work with you, keep me with my buddies. Don't split us up. And then you guys go somewhere and you start practicing these things. Maybe this will be the third try you'll get to change their hearts and minds. They'll see you doing this and go, hey, you know what? We should be doing what those guys are doing. That looks pretty tight, what they're doing over there. See how they're searching their own car? See how they're approaching the vehicle? See how they're doing challenges? See how they're maintaining eye contact with one another? They're not crossing each other's field of fire? See how they're using their radios properly? And then check your gear out. Make a loud verbal proclamation to your own guys in your own squad. Hey, everybody, make sure you got batteries. Everybody, we're going to do a radio comm check in 5 minutes. I want everybody to spread out so we don't get feedback on the radios. We're going to do comm checks. Everybody check your weapons, you know, and lead by example. Lead by example, because we have a lot of well-meaning people that haven't got the foggiest freaking idea what they're doing out there. Now, I'm not General Patton. I'm not that. But I can see when there's a problem and I'm trying to help it. Just start the music when you want to. And just kind of give me a signal that's wanting to shut up. Are you guys picking up what I'm putting down? I'm trying to save somebody from getting shot. I'm trying to save a media nightmare. Because they will jump all over us when Bubba shoots Leroy out there on the border. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break right now. I'm going to go hug my wife again. And we'll be back after the break. Listen to the commercial. Check out the website. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Liberty Tree Radio Network and youbroadcast.com Dutch Jones radio program.
Oh, Father, why are you so sad on this bright Easter morn? When Irishmen are proud and glad of the land that they were born. Oh, son, I see in memory too of far off distant days, when being just a lad like you, I joined the IRA.
Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Oh, Graham McGree, I long to see the boys of the old brigade.
From hills and farms,
the call to arms was heard by one and all. And from the glen came brave young men to answer Ireland's call. Was long ago we faced a foe, the old brigade and me. And by my side they fought and died that Ireland might be free. Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Oh, Graham McGree, I long to see the boys of the old brigade.
Now, my boy, I told you why on Easter morn I sigh. For I recall my comrades all of dark old days gone by. I think of men who fought in glens with rifle and grenade. May heaven keep the men who sleep from the ranks of the old brigade.
Where are the lads who stood with me when history was made? Oh, Graham McGree, I long to see the rise of the old brigade. Where are the lads who stood with me when history
best conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival, escape routes, and plans, and putting together your bug-out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family, get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention. Attention. This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody!
Heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Shut back down and shut your trap! It's time for
Dutch Jones! Dutch Jones!
Radio program!
And now for something completely different.
Now, I'm Lou. Yeah. Yes, I'm on. This is the Dutch Jones radio program for the 6th of August, 2010. 6th of August, 2010. We're currently live. We have no phone line today because every time someone calls, it disconnects the DSL. I have no idea why. It's just one of those things that we're always fighting. We are coming to you live from an undisclosed position. We're on the road. We have one laptop, one microphone, and we're making it work. The soundboard doesn't work. The wires are worn out. The headphone jack on this computer doesn't work anymore, so I can't even... So we're just playing the speaker, and Lou just turns it off, and he's doing a great job. Thank you, Lou. I'm supposed to say you're welcome.
You're welcome, you ungrateful.
Welcome, you. He just called me ungrateful. So no tater tots for him. I don't know if we have to. You get nothing and you'll like it for dinner. Yeah. But we're back. We've been talking about what it takes to actually train a militia, and I'm being specific when it comes to guard duty. Ed said something. I made a comment about we don't need Bubba shooting... Leroy's out there, you know, because the media will have a field day. And Ed put in the chat room, if he doesn't mind me sharing this, maybe Leroy had it coming. I can honestly tell you, I haven't met a Leroy in my entire life that didn't have it coming.
Look at Leroy Jenkins.
Leroy Jenkins, Leroy, bad Leroy Brown. What's going on in there?
Oh, Ed says you're doing good with what you have.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. You'd laugh. This lavalier microphone is like got a 2.5-foot maybe a 3-foot long cable. I can't leave the computer. And I don't even know where I found it. It's got a little tiny clip. It's going on my T-shirt. I may use this for my tactical mic later. If it sounds this good, I'll plug it into my radio so I can look like Secret Service. Yes, go ahead. Put it on the end of my sleeve. Now, to share with you that I'm not trying to be some arrogant, ex-military, know-it-all guy, I'm going to share with you a little something I did that got me in all kinds of trouble. And thank the Lord it was a training scenario. And not too many people died doing this. Well, nobody died. I thought I was going to because everybody hated me. I was at Fort McClellan, Alabama. It was after I had injured my leg and was no longer airborne. So I was going through the military police academy there. And to graduate, we had to do what was called B-44. B-44 was the name of the range. We had to go on a one-week simulated warfare series of missions in our company size and platoon size and fire team size. They would move it around. And sometimes we would just be given a map coordinate and we'd have to show up and secure a road. Well, that's what happened. My fire team, the platoon sergeants, which were E6s and E7s that were going through MP training, you know, would assign us and we'd go out. So we're out at this three-way junction of roads. After dark, we had a hasty fighting position put up. We moved the Humvee off the road, camouflaged it, thought we were all good, dragged some obstacles onto the road that we could remove, but it would let people slow down. Well, we hear a deuce and a half coming. And the Op 4 was other units from the area. It was NCOs. It was the drill sergeants, opposing forces. So we had this deuce and a half coming. And the challenge was a visual challenge. We'd flash so many times with a red lens, and they had to flash their headlights or answer with the red lens in a certain pattern, and they wouldn't do it. So we got everything ready. They pull up. They couldn't get around our barricade, so they stopped. And we're telling them to get out of the vehicle. We're yelling at them. They're looking all confused. We're waiting for an ambush to come popping out from behind, you know, from this deuce and a half. So, and we stopped them about 30 yards away from where the fighting position was. We're yelling commands at them and everything. And finally, I don't know what I was thinking, I got the simulated LAW rocket out. And I popped it open. For those of you, the LAW rocket was a disposable, expandable rocket. It shot a charge about the size of an egg of C4. And it was a shaped charge, but the simulated ones would pop orange paint all over everything. So I jumped up and I just, you know, back blast area clear, you know, and my guys are firing blanks, and I fire this LAW rocket and it goes right into the grill of the vehicle, and paint goes everywhere. Next thing you know, I hear a whistle blowing, referee comes out, they're all screaming at us. It was our chow. It was our own mess people from our own training facility that were bringing warm chow out to us to eat. You know, they bring it out in these cans. Well, I blew up the truck with this LAW rocket. Even though I argued later that it was too close, the weapon wouldn't have armed, it would have bounced off because they were only 30 yards away, whatever. And so I'm arguing with them all this. So the referee says, turn the truck around and take it back. All the food's blown up. So I had to radio in to our tactical operations center that not only did I deny access to our mess crew people that came in from Alpha 787, our training battalion, I blew up the food and the referees were sending it back. We all had to have MREs again that night instead of fried chicken and spaghetti. I was on everybody's poop list for the rest of training because of what I did. Now, they said I used too much force for the problem. I should have called for the mic force to come in. I didn't follow protocol. I grabbed a LAW rocket for a deuce and a half instead of armor, which it was designed for. I disobeyed everything. And it was not because I wasn't briefed properly. It's because I wanted to play Johnny Rambo, and I wanted to make these, you know, other MPs go, hey, this guy knows what's going on. We all make mistakes. You know, granted, I would have killed our own guys, but then hopefully they would have been trained in how to respond. They would have been trained to flash their headlight. If we did three, they were going to do one long, two short, whatever it was, or present their red flashlights and do the proper flashback. We would have told them to proceed. We would have sent one of our guys out to move the barricades and all that. But a prime example of they were going into something they had no idea. They're just rear echelon mofos coming out to bring us food. We're not part of the training scenario. But the referee that was with us thought he'd, you know, just teach us all a lesson. We all make mistakes. Why are you laughing over there? What are you laughing at, Stacy?
Warren said you blew up dinner.
I did. I blew up dinner. I don't always blow up dinner, but I have that. That's what training is for. That'll never leave my mind. But that doesn't mean I'm going to hesitate if there is a threat and I have an AT-4 at my access. You know, I'm going to use it. But I didn't tell anybody I was going to do it. I didn't. You know, I wasn't necessarily in charge. We were all of equal rank. Nobody. You know, just I should have thought twice about it. There may have been another scenario. But you're not going to get this unless you train. You know, granted, here I am a young 19, 20-year-old kid that was just looking for an excuse to use the LAW rocket simulator. Because I didn't get to fire one in basic training. But I can't stress it enough. Training is everything in this, and just because we're militia doesn't mean that we can't have some kind of structure. You know, and you'll hear me argue it if you're watching me on the forums. Those of you that are on different forums I'm on, I'll say I am not part of the regulated militia. I am not part of the governor's militia of the state of California. We are unregulated, unenrolled. That doesn't mean that we conduct ourselves differently. It just means we answer to a different authority. We will answer to a higher authority when that day comes, when the Lord raises someone up and anoints someone. We've had that discussion a lot here. But we better dang well be ready to be able to do that and be able to fit in with other troops. That's why I love what's going on at Liberty Tree Radio. I love what's going on with the Michigan militias and the people from there that are telling me the kind of training they're getting. They'll be able to... It doesn't matter if they're Wolverines, Colonial Marines, whatever. We have to have a basis of ability so that we can mesh in with one another. We'll specialize, you know, in our areas, but something as simple as guard duty is a good place to start. And I said there are different types of guard duty, but just maintaining control of a perimeter. Doing an overwatch scenario where you put somebody up high on a peak with communications and optics so they can keep giving you instant intel on movement around you. It's not going to be any good if you just send Tom, Dick, or Harry up there without any training. They don't even know. I have literally been in situations with militia guys on the border when you hand some guy a night vision goggle, even a monocular, and go, here, I want you to sweep that area over there to the left within those bounds that we set up there. And they go, I don't know how to use night vision. These are basic things. I met guys who don't know how to use binoculars. I've met people in the militia that go out and buy, you know, a Savage 110 rifle, a really nice scope, go to the range, and they don't even know how to use the mil dot system on their scope. Now, I'm not mocking them. At least they've taken the step. But you can't just buy the equipment and the gear and the clothes and show up. You've got to know how to use it. And I think guard duty is a great way of doing it, especially for small units. Because let's say this shooting war starts. Doesn't matter who the aggressor is. And you've only got five guys in your unit. What are you going to do? Wouldn't it be great if you could show up to the regional militia guy that you've heard about, that you've talked to, you've met at coffee breaks, you know, coffee meetings, you've gone some training with him. You say, look, boss, me and my five guys are here. You need to secure that north road. We got it. And then you tell them what your experience is. We've trained to do this. We've got this gear. We've got thermals, thermal vision. We've got night vision. We've got these radios on these frequencies. We've run scenarios already on challenge and answer. We know how to secure a vehicle and isolate a vehicle so that it will do the least amount of damage. We brought our own homemade vehicle denial systems. You can take regular metal fence posts and a welder and some thinking, and you can stop a vehicle. It will lift the vehicle off the ground. Simple fence posts, folks. You sharpen the ends, they puncture through the vehicle. You don't need a lot. You just need a few things that you can, apply to the scenario. Always be training. It's good to practice. And one of the ways we practice, we did this in church. I took four chairs, put them in the front of the church, put four people in the chairs, and pretended that was a vehicle approaching. And sometimes I'd sit in the chair and I would yell, what are you doing? Stop me. By what authority do you stop me? What are you doing on my road? I live up here past the road. How dare you? You train your people to deal with just outright pissed off citizens who have nothing to do with the conflict. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with an irate person? What do you do when the guy starts reaching under the seat? Does everybody know what you're going to do? They better. How are they supposed to react? Is that guy coming up and yelling at you just an irate citizen that has his cabin up behind you, that has just as much right to that, to get to it, as you did to get where you did, so you have to defuse him? Or is he a distraction to draw all four guards to look at that car? Well, the element that's on foot is going to outflank you and take you out. And in this modern day, I hate to say this, but how do you react to a suicide bomber? What are you going to do? You're going to guess while you're there? Or are you going to run scenarios and train people ahead of time? Everybody wants to go to the shooting range and see how far they can shoot and what type of group they can get. Very few people want to show up for a training weekend with airsoft, where you just use somebody's car and just over and over and over again practice positioning. Where are you going to go? Dynamic takeover of a vehicle? When's the time to pull off? And not everything's going to give you the right answer, but at least it'll give you a menu of skills, a toolbox, if you like that better, where you'll be able to deal with that, and you have a better chance of surviving a real world scenario or situation, not a scenario. You don't have to have a bunch of fancy stuff. If you don't want to train with your real weapons, use broomsticks. Yell bang. There's no disgrace in that. And anybody who says there is doesn't belong in this movement. If you got paintball guns, use them. Most people don't want their cars getting shot up with paintball guns in the interior. Use airsoft. That's what we do. You don't even need fancy airsoft. Just something to get the point across so that you're aware of where the muzzle is. What do you say to... How do you take verbally control of a person in a car? Not going to work every time, but I can tell you, sometimes I can scare the crud out of people just by my facial expression and my voice, but the whole time, I'm scared too, but they don't know it. I'm scaring Lou right now, he said, and I'm staring up at the wall. I'm looking at your baby picture over there on the wall, Lou. Isn't that cute? But we've got to do this stuff now. So work on those verbal conflict and confrontation stuff. It's fun, too. Take the wimpiest guy in your church, well, your militia, we're a church militia, and confront him. And if he can't handle it in training, if he wets himself or freezes up there, reassign him. Don't be a bad leader and put him out on a gate. We got a guy in our church that I just love. Real good guy, old cowboy guy. But the minute I start yelling at him or challenging him or trying to enforce the rules, he looks like he's going to wet himself. Not really. That was demeaning. I shouldn't have said it that way. But he locks up because he's not used to that. But I bet if I put that guy on a radio, I put that guy in a medical position, I put that guy up on a hill with a long-range rifle where he doesn't have to worry about the interpersonal communications. But you're not going to know that unless you run these training scenarios. So many militias. I get all these emails. Hey, this weekend we're going to go out to the range and fire up 10,000 rounds. I wish you could be there. Yeah, but what's the training goal? To fire the rounds and to make sure our weapons work and people can shoot? Okay. So your training goal is to punch holes in paper. Your training goal should always be to make your people able to survive any situation. That's why we do trainings on everything from butchering chickens, surviving cold and hot weather casualty, you know, scenarios, gathering of food. You know, I don't know. I'm not. It's almost as if people want to get into the Hollywood glamour part of this. Everybody wants to go watch Red Dawn, which is one of my most favorite of movies of all time, and they think that's what it's about. I wish that movie had spent more time on the other stuff they had to do. There's like the scenario when I think it's a major. Was it a major or a colonel? It was a colonel. The pilot is trying to show him, you know, and he's using military terms. Here's a defilade, this flank, left flank, where they're going to raid the concentration camp. I wish they'd have put more into that, showing how you take angry Americans that are defending their homeland from pitchfork, you know, torch crowd to a viable tactical entry team. We need to spend more time on that. And I don't always enjoy that. I hate doing SWAT tactics. I hate it, but I know I need to have it in my head. And it's funny because people will ask me, well, train us this, train us that. And I'm like, okay, I can do those things, but why don't we work on the basics first? And even if your militia's been around for 20 or 30 years and you've got ex-military guys, revisit these things. Revisit, what do you do once you've taken the people out of the vehicle? What do you do with them? Do you have a system for securing, transporting safely civilians? Ones that are maybe non-combatants, or you don't know what their threat level is yet or what their intelligence value is yet? Do you have designated people that are going to be the ones moving them? Who are you going to leave behind at the main gate? Does everybody come down? Do you have vehicles that will, you know, roving guards that can go remove them? Have you even taught your people how to search a person, to do a head-to-toe search of an individual to make sure that they are rendered safe? A lot of militias don't want to do that. Well, it makes me feel like a cop. I don't want to do that. What do you do when you deliver a guy back to your command post and he pulls out a pig sticker and takes out one of your key personnel because you didn't want to put your hands on another feller's inside seam? The time for egos, the time for bravado is over. We here in America are long past the tipping point of facing life-threatening scenarios. Look at the newspapers. Look at what's going on the border. You want to come play on the border with me? You better know what you're doing. And I have enough respect for the guys in Arizona and on the California border or wherever that are down there fighting for their very homes to not go down there like an idiot and just go, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I want to do everything. I'm going to go down there when I go down again and say, here's what I can do. Where do you need me to fit in? These are the things I'm trained in. These are the things I've actually done. And these are the things I've trained in recently. Here's my gear. Here's my current physical situation that I'm in. And I'm not just going to take the first thing they say because I'm embarrassed. Hey, we need you to get up on that 4,000-foot peak over there and keep an eye on our backs. I'll be like, I don't think I can make that hike. Okay? I as a leader would rather know that. If God forbid I ever get put in a leadership position, but I don't want that kind of pressure. But if I am, if the situation calls for it, I'm not just going to take anybody's word for anything. Period. There are too many fakers out there depending on other people's laurels. And yeah, we're all men. We all brag a little bit. We all do this stuff. But when it comes down to it, where the rubber meets the road. Where's the time here? 52. Honesty is everything in this. It goes back to being coram Deo in the face of God with how we do this. Be very realistic. And that may make a lot of people mad around me. I do not pull punches anymore with anyone. If I look at them and go, you know what, I don't think you're capable of doing this. I don't think this is something you should be doing. I have that same attitude with training. If somebody has a topic, hey, we want you to train this, and I go, I really can't train that. We're going to have to bring somebody from outside. Like the last class Lou had. They needed somebody to train them on how to shoot pistol on the move. Now, I've had classes in it. I've watched some great training videos in it. I've actually fired my pistol in anger on the move. But I don't think I'm the guy to train anybody. So instead, they went to an expert and had them train them. And that's going to be the next level of training for our basic academy kind of thing here, too. And it's a good way of separating the sheep from the goats, too. If people are incapable of doing dry fire shoot on the move stuff or airsoft shoot on the move, we're not going to give them a loaded gun. Or not give them a loaded gun, let them use their loaded gun. You get what I'm saying? There's a gleaning process. That doesn't mean we throw anybody away. There's a refining process. Some things are diesel, some things are high octane aviation fuel. They all have their purpose, don't they? But you're not going to know what part of the fuel they are until you apply a little heat. Boy, that's a good analogy. I hope I remember that one. It's a refining process for us as Christian soldiers. I'm not a shock troop. I'm barely a home guard. But I know that. I know that and I accept that. I'm part of the alarm squad, which would probably be the closest I would be. Whatever militia I end up in, wherever I end up living, I don't know where God has called me to be, if the battle's going to be here or elsewhere. I will take with me my toolkit that I have, and I will honestly portray myself to whoever I'm around and say, look, this is what I got, this is what I can do. Period. And I'm asking you guys to do that, because this person that was involved in this incident that I'm tiptoeing around, I knew him years ago. I knew he was like that years ago, and I wanted nothing to do with him. And these guys will pop up. These guys will pop up because they are just this cause draws them. There are guys out there, these keyboard commandos, these paper tigers that want to do something. Our role as militia people are to identify them and attenuate their desire to match their ability. You know? I'm not saying throw these people away, but because most militias want to be polite and we need everybody we can get, we need everybody here, you know, we don't want to limit anybody. Everybody gets to be Rambo. That's what you're going to get. People shooting at their militia commanders by accident. Ask people to prove what they're doing. I'm not saying they should show up with a box full of certificates. But to say, oh, really, you did that? Here, show. Can you train us in that? Can you show us what you did? Do you get any, you know, who do you know that you did this with? Check people out. I check people out all the time. We use the internet to do background checks on people, Lou and I. Somebody comes in here and says, oh, I was a Navy SEAL in Vietnam, and I kidnapped Ho Chi Minh, but they made me give him back. It was all politics. It's all who you know. We check that out. I mean, some things you're not going to be able to check out, but you can tell. And inversely, you may have some guy that's, you know, some Vietnam vet that's, you know, walking with a cane and doesn't have that glimmer in his eye, but his heart's still there. You can use him for all kinds of training and stuff.
Even a side
Yeah, isheforreal.com. Isheforreal.com. If I told you my real name, you guys could look me up on that, but I'm never giving out my real name. Yeah, it's Bob. My name is Bob Smith. Bob, actually, it's Robert Bob Smith. And I was a four-star general in the Green Beret in Korea, and I saved an entire village from cholera or something.
Cholera.
I don't know. It's easy to make stuff up. It's hard to actually be able to do it. I have more respect for a guy who can do one thing well and that's all he does than somebody who comes to you with, I can do this, I can do that, I'm your guy. You know, and also on your part, and this is something I had to learn the hard way, don't volunteer for everything. If you're creating a new relationship with a militia, shut up and listen and pray. Pray about where you can serve those serve in that militia. Take some time. Don't just run in there and make all these promises. I was big on that right when I got out of the Army. I'd show up in a militia, yeah, I'm an MP, I just got out, I know all this stuff, I can do all this stuff. Be humble that way too. Listen more than you talk. You know, it's funny coming from a guy like me who never shuts up for 2 hours a day. But sit and listen, observe, see where they need. They may need something that they don't even know they need that you could help them with. You know, you may be the world's greatest latrine manufacturer for cheap, and they never even thought about putting a bunch of latrines on wagons. You never know. And don't knock down what their current staff are doing. Go, hey, you got that guy doing radio? He's an idiot. Unless he's really, really an idiot. But say, hey, maybe I could help him, and then go over there and help. Be humble. What do we got left? Less than a minute? Anyway, I got to turn it this way so I can see the time now. Oh, I see. I just hope I'm getting through to you. I don't see any of you being this way. I see other people. You know, the problem is more people need to listen to the Dutch Jones radio program. Maybe they would get it. I'm just kidding. But if we approach each other this way, there'll be less infighting, less bruised egos, less risk of injury. God forbid, less ammo for the media to get a hold of. Just like I won't let any media people talk to me because I'm a big fat guy and that's what they show. Oh, look at this big fat militia guy. I don't want to defame the cause because, you know, I lack eating discipline. I am working on it. But I realize the cause is bigger than me. It's a holy cause of liberty. I don't use that just flippantly. I really sincerely mean that. And because it's holy, I have to make certain that I honor it in that way. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to go out with music. You know, I can't talk over the music. Go ahead and start playing it, though. Maybe they can hear it in the background. But folks, just remember, everything you do in the holy cause of liberty, do it for the Lord first, do it for your fellow man second, and then put yourself in third or fourth. I put God, family, church, and then me. I'm fourth. That's where I'm at. And country is fifth. Because I don't have a country anymore. The country is the one I'm looking forward to forming with you folks when we win this war of federal aggression on us. Folks, we'll be back Monday. Make sure you go to djstore.tk. djstore.tk. If you can pitch in $5, please do. We want to send some money over to Liberty Tree Radio to help cover the bandwidth cost. And that's where we're heading. We'll be back Monday. God bless you.